podcast. My alias for podcast is podcat. Like to open the podcast document.
Podcast.
And then.
Man, I don't have shell aliases.
For you, that blows my mind.
It's not the level at which I operate.
Our one-on-one alias is for you is Chris. I have one for Chad and Tom.
I have a Tmux alias that splits shit open, and then I have Control-P.
Split shit open.
Yeah, so it splits open a Tmux pane, and then it opens Vim in the right directory with Control-P running. So I have one thing that gets me into my wiki, which I then can fuzzy complete to any file, rather than like a specific one that I need to remember for one-on-one versus one for podcast versus one for whatever.
Sure. Same deal. I also have a thing. I have the same deal.
Yeah, so I don't want you to think I don't have configurations and tweaks and workflows.
No,
man.
I can tell. You're,
That's
you're,
not who I am.
You're pretty much a noob when it comes to Vim and the show.
I'm a noob.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Chris.
And we're going to be talking about the products that we manage at ThoughtBot. I run an app called FormKeep, which provides form backends for designers and developers.
And I, Chris, run Upcase, our subscription learning platform for aspiring web developers. Hi, Ben.
I think we should start including more informal, pre-roll-y, jokey stuff.
Like in the actual pre-roll and the recorded before the Giant Robots.
Yeah, but no, it doesn't even necessarily have to be pre-roll. I just want like more authenticity.
I'm fine with that.
All right, good. So just so you know, we already started.
Surprise. This is the start of that. You've been trying to do this each week. You interjected your whole adventure about the airplanes, which was crazy. But
oh, I wish I had a rant for this week. I should keep a track of my gripes.
You should. You should have a gripes.md file where you keep all your gripes.
Yeah, I'll have a gripes shell alias that I run whenever I have a gripe. See, I'm wary of doing that. I thought also of having like a Twitter account that wasn't.
Don't automate the things you shouldn't do as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't make it like, don't have a thing that, where you collect all the stuff that makes you mad because it teaches you to look out for things that make you mad.
Pipe to dev null.
No, but like I have a gratitude shell alias.
Right.
Which goes to a gratitude journal, which is funny because everyone can see that I have a gratitude journal in my
So you
could
have
files.
The same for gripes, but it goes to dev null. And that's
Oh,
your...
I type it and then it goes away.
Right. You send it into the void. It is gone from you now. Whereas gratitude, you want to keep and think about and revisit.
That might be actually really good. I want a similar thing for a read later extension. Like it's like Pocket has like a Chrome extension where like you like I should read this article, but I'm not going to read it now. So you click like the save button, and it's like saved. And
Pocket
it gives me
to
that
dev null.
It gives me that sense of like, oh, I've now dealt with this. Although I never go back and read them. Just
yeah.
About. So yeah, I just want, someone has actually made this, but I had the idea independently of this. I know this exists, so you don't have to send me the links on the Twitter, because I know someone has already done this, but I came up with it independently, and I was like, this should be a thing, where it's just like, yep, saved, don't worry about it, go on with your day. It's like, great, but then there's no pile of stuff to go look at later.
Man, what does it say about the human psyche that, like, I honestly believe that if this existed, or like that you might use this. Fully knowing what you're doing. It's like, all right, my brain requires me to say that in the future I will come back to this. So click, even though a smarter part of my brain knows that I won't, but that smarter part loses.
There's a lot of dumb brain. We're just stupid meat sacks.
You ever read, what is it, Thinking Fast and Slow?
Sort of. Some
of
it.
I can't get through it.
I read part of it fast and then kind of...
I wonder if there's a good Reader's Digest version of it because I've tried it more than once and I just cannot get into it despite... knowing what it's about and loving the concept and thinking it's really interesting conversational matter and just that right level of pop science sort of thing.
I'm going to share a philosophy with you.
Ooh.
You only need to read the first 20% of any nonfiction book.
I mean, so the general idea that you only need to read a 20%, I agree with. The fact that it's the first 20%, I tend to not find to be the case. I find that they're rambling and explaining why you should listen to them.
You can skip that.
Okay, so I got to get into, but then only 20% from there.
All right, so maybe, yeah, so.
So what I would like is
notice
the
that
Reader's
the
Digest version.
Yeah, notice that the first chapter is usually why you should care.
Yeah.
And then
man,
like read the 20%, and then you just be like, I'm done with this. Or actually, just don't read anything and just pipe to dev null.
I believe this is one of your core philosophies around giving conference talks is do not start with an introduction and why people should care about who you are. And I agree with that, but times 1,000 for nonfiction books. Like, I'm already reading your book. Please tell me... what the content of your book is.
Yeah, I've been trying those executive summary things a little bit.
Get Abstract, is it that one?
It's not a particular service.
Okay.
It's like Amazon ebook things where someone's like, you got to read this nonfiction book. And then I look and like, there's the book for like $16. And then like, there's like the executive summary of same book for like $3. Hmm. And as you know, it's like 20 pages or something, or not even. And I read that, and like most of the time, I'm like, man, I'm glad I didn't try to read that book. That's this like, and I, so I, just to test, because I was like, I need to know what I'm getting into, or I need to see both. I bought both. So I read the like, you know, short version, and then I started reading the full one. And I was
efficiency
like,
gain negative 20 points.
But see, I need to know if this like if this company that makes these things is legit, or like this idea in general is legit.
After reading it, did you come away with the same thing that is in their abstract? That's your test.
I read the full book first, and then I read the abstract one, and I was
like, that's the correct way to do it.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that was pretty much it.
Okay.
So I don't know if I'll keep doing this or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's useful to have the extra content when you need to convince someone of something, when you need sort of emotional supportive cases. But in a lot of cases, I'm already sold on the idea. I've been told by people that I trust, you should read this thing. Getting Things Done, life-changing book. You absolutely need to read this.
Okay. You don't. You only need to read the beginning.
One. But anyway, examples like that where enough people that I trust say, like, this is a really good thing. I got tons of value from it. When two or three of those happen for the same book, I'm like, okay, now I'm reading this.
Sure.
Now I want the most concise form of that possible. And that's the case for me with like, I don't come into a lot of nonfiction. It's like, hey, I don't know. What's going on here in this old book? I found it. I'm not picking up books in the airport, which apparently is a thing. And books are designed to fit on airport bookshelves.
Oh, really?
I've heard that anecdotally, and I have no idea if that's true. But lots of pop science in that world. But sure. The idea that most books are like these really short things, they're long blog articles that get inflated into a book.
Right, because it has to be a certain size. It has to look like it's a legit book. This is why I like ebooks, because I can also pipe those to DevNull, which is basically what I do. I'm like, I'm definitely going to read this book, put it in the Dropbox folder. Yeah, I need so many DevNulls. I need DevNulls everywhere. Let's talk about our products.
DevNull, all the things. Let's talk about our products.
So, I have some good... I'll start.
Sure.
I have some good news. I have good news, bad news. How about bad news first?
Yeah, typically.
Okay. The bad news is it seems that I have actually made our activation rate worse. So, when I talk about the activation rate, I'm referring to people that sign up, create an account, give us their credit card, and... Old funnel, create an account, enter credit card, create a form, receive a submission.
Okay.
That's when we've done like the minimum viable, this thing actually works.
Yep.
I made some changes to the activation flow. Mm-hmm. One of which was I removed the explicit step of creating a form. Almost no one dropped at that step, but it was like, I just decided like, can't we just default a form for you?
It was in theory a friction point. It was something they had to do.
Right. It was like, pick a name for the form. Yep. And they were like, I was like, why don't I just default? Give them a thing called default first form and just drop them to the next step, which is like, now send us some data. So that was there are basically two big changes. One was that, and the other was just a bunch of copy changes on that like setup page, which is like, now you're here. Here's how to send us data. And the rate of people going from the credit card to receive submission, what used to be about 50%, and now it is 37% over the last period of time.
How big of a sample?
Not a ton. Like both those are like the old one was like 16 people out of 31 people. I think I looked over like 3 weeks or something, a 3 week period, and the new one's like 10 out of 27. So, you know, might be early to even like worry about it, or to think about it too much, but I don't know. To me, it seems like the activation is better. That actually removing of the form step might be confusing to people. Because like after the end of the credit card, all of a sudden it's like, now send us data.
Yeah.
It's like, to what and why and what's going on? Whereas if like when I sign up for a service, like you expect that the first thing you're going to do is create a new whatever, like a new widget. Like we have widgets and like, okay, first thing, new widget.
Yep.
And now that we're auto widgeting, I wonder if that might be more confusing.
I could see the case. But that said, we had a conversation and in it I was like, oh, I definitely think you should get rid of that step. And you were like, yeah, I should get rid of that step. And then you got rid of it. So we've seen the other side too.
We've
both had that opinion. I don't know. Like, how much longer do you think you'll watch it?
Longer. This is like a crucial number for the business.
Yeah.
And so,
oh, absolutely. And if it holds at this, I'm colored right now by a very recent podcast that I listened to. It was an episode of Planet Money, which is an amazing podcast if anyone out there is not listening to it. But for some reason, this seemed like kind of an off-center topic for them, but it was about statistical validity in scientific studies. And there was basically this meta study where they said, all right, we're going to take 100 published results, 100 published studies, reproduce them, see if we get the same result as them using their stated procedures. And 61% of the retrials did not get the same result. Mm-hmm. 61% failure to reproduce, essentially.
Yeah.
And so that loosely was like a hair on fire statistic, like, oh my God, everything is broken in the universe. Science doesn't work. But there was a very particular thing that they identified, which was this idea of chasing the win,
right.
chasing the positive For sure. result. And so the idea of if you don't go in with a stated sample size, with a stated procedure that includes when do we cut off the study, then you are in danger of continuing just until you get a positive result and cutting it off immediately at
yep.
that, which optimizes you towards getting that positive result and actually shifts statistically the whole thing.
Yep.
And so the solution to this is to pre-register, apparently. You define the study that you're going to do, including the sample size, as a fixed value before doing it, then after you upload the results. And this has two benefits, one of avoiding that statistical muckery, and the second of now a lot of null results or negative results, like, oh, turns out there's no correlation between Cheerios and diabetes. Okay, but now we know that, and now that's in the published record rather than in a file drawer.
Right.
So it was an amazing episode, really interesting, and it brings to mind this sort of thing, like, how much further are you going to go? And if the answer is, I don't know until I know, like, and this is me pulling pop science out of the air like people do when they listen to a podcast about science stuff, but I don't know if maybe picking a fixed number would be an interesting thing there.
Yeah, I wonder if it makes sense to think about it in cohorts. And that's what I was trying to do was like, okay, the cohorts that saw this versus the last 3 week cohort that didn't. I think almost any approach that's not in like a randomly selected A/B test is going to be flawed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's just this, like, we're getting worse traffic, like a less qualified traffic.
It's also not huge numbers.
It's not huge numbers.
There's noises in there.
So like, this may have been just a total worthless digression and it'll go back up, or it may have been noise is what I mean.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do other than to keep an eye on it. I mean, I guess the one thing to do would be to start an A/B test, but I don't have the numbers to like actually support it. Like, not enough people move through this point of the funnel to like get an A/B test done in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting and complex thing. Like, this is your testing budget, and it's currently locked up in this, and it doesn't seem to be going well. It's like, oh man, that's rough on a bunch of fronts.
You mean like if I were to run a test on that, that's what I would think?
I mean, in a sense, you are running a test. You're just doing time series interrupted, and you're not going to mess with other stuff in here right now, right? Because that will interfere
with... I'm not doing a test. I disagree it's a test. There's no control, which means there's no test, which means it's not science.
Well, you're comparing statistical numbers. How would you say that that is not a test? The fact that you're not doing it as a parallel A/B test, I'll agree with that, but you are still doing a test, and you're still looking at the change in behavior based on a change in the application. And you're trying to decide whether or not your changes were beneficial or negative. I would call that a test.
Okay, sure. I guess it's a nomenclature thing.
Yeah, I think it is. And I agree. Overall, you definitely want to do the parallel A/B tests to avoid any time stuff. But right now, you chose not to. You're in that position. This is still a test. You still need to think about it that way. And if you change anything else right now, then you obviously nullify whatever you think you might know.
That's funny, because that brings me to my second point, which is actually the good news. So yeah, just to wrap that up, though, is like, yeah, I'm going to just keep looking at it and see what happens.
I think that makes sense.
It may just be a blip. Who knows? I also may have walked through the tracks that had been left. Anyway, terrible metaphor. We launched our new UI.
Is it live?
It's live.
Oh, I checked earlier today and it wasn't up.
When I say new UI, that's probably a strong word. I've been talking about this UI refactor. The new UI is roughly the same, but actually there are some pretty substantial changes.
This is behind the marketing screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So we kept all the whole marketing side of the house is all the same, but the inside of the house is now all different. Are you seeing this?
I am.
So, biggest thing is, like, on FormKeep, the whole left chunk of the screen, like basically a third of the screen, was dedicated to the list of forms, and then the rest was like, here are your list of submissions, or 20% for list of forms, 20% list of submissions, and then 60% showing individual submissions. So we had like three things on the screen simultaneously.
Yep.
And this moves to forms now in a drop down at the top. This is, why am I talking about a UI on a podcast?
Yeah.
This is terrible. But anyway, so the UI has fixed some like things that were kind of silly, like showing the full list of forms all the time. Most of the time you don't care to see all of your forms. You just want to know which form you're looking at currently. It's a better use of screen real estate. It's kind of like hierarchical. Like, you dive down into a form, and then from the form you see the submissions list, and then from the submission list you see the whatever. And I like it a lot better. I think it's nice.
So what are the intended wins or gains to be had from this change?
So two things. One is just that it's just better. Like people send me support requests like, how do I access my account settings? And they say that because for basically kind of no reason, we put the account settings and the logout button in the bottom left of the screen. It was just like, because it like, oh, we can stick it on the form list, which is on the left of the screen. We'll just throw it at the bottom.
Yep.
No one looks in the bottom left of the screen for their account settings page. So that is now where you'd expect it, which is in the top right.
Yep.
Along with logout and, you know, things like that. Better use of screen real estate. So it's like, it's, I think like the information architecture, I mean, not information architecture, I guess just design wise, it makes more sense now. The real estate is used better. So that's one thing. It's just superior, I think. Second, I expect to get fewer support requests of the nature of like, how do I go over here and change this thing? The second thing is that we took this opportunity to basically destroy and build from scratch all of our styles.
Phoenix.
Yes. So the first part of my FormKeep tenure was ripping out the front end, all the templates in the JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And then the second part was raising the prices. And the third part is throwing out all the styles and right. doing those from scratch. So much like the Ember thing, we now have a wonderful, beautiful, clean base to work from.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when I proposed these changes to Tyson, who was the designer that led this effort, he was like, they're in pretty rough shape, like to the point where I think it probably makes sense to not use them. Let's just start from scratch ish. We'll keep them for the marketing site. Like we'll do as little as we have to, but let's get a clean slate kind
right.
of, which is the siren song of everybody of yep. anyone that has written code or markup or all that stuff. And so I said, all right, fine, let's do it. And then we did.
And then you did.
Yeah. So hopefully, I like the Ember thing, we have laid a nice groundwork for going much faster in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That was the sort of cost benefit proposition.
Analysis.
In
ROI.
In my head.
So, yeah. This is new enough that we obviously can't really talk about the return on that. But I would love, and we spoke about this last time, in a few weeks to revisit this and think about like, all right, so put some effort into it. Was it worth it? Have mm-hmm. we made enough changes that we've seen that return, and have they been that much easier,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. But again, I think we want to let this stew for a little bit and let you actually do some work in the app before we look at that.
Totally.
But we have a case study now, so we can look at it.
Yes. And like, I think like you just touched on, you can't really tell if it was a good decision until later.
Yes.
And even then you kind of can't really tell because who knows what the alternate
yep.
Timeline looked like.
But if only we could relive all possible timelines and then choose the best one. Be a fun game.
Sure.
Let's build a product on that.
Okay. I'm glad it's done. It's definitely a little bit rough. I was like, let's ship it kind of thing, which is sort of my jam, which Tyson was really into. I think it's probably fun to work on a thing where someone's like, as soon as this can go, let's go. And I partly wanted to make sure it was done before this. So I was like, all right. So we have some rough hedges to sand down, but I'm psyched that it's out.
Nice. Well, congratulations on getting that out. That's fun.
Thank you.
Looking at it, it's very different.
It's a good bit different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all the same pieces are there. It's still, you're looking at what makes you say it's very different?
Just because it is.
Okay.
The layout, it's a fundamentally different thing. There's sort of a block structure to it. There was the fixed sidebar up against the side. One thing that does actually come to mind right now is as I start to think about what were the shapes that used to be here, your marketing page still has those shapes. So I could look at that and say, like, that's what it used to look like. So do you have plans of kind of revisiting that to make
for
it better
sure.
represent
I'm,
this?
I'm hoping to hang on to Tyson. We'll see how that goes. I would love to redo the marketing page, the marketing site. I think there's a lot of improvement that could be made. Like we just think about FormKeep more. I know much more about it and who the customer is and mm-hmm. what the goodness is. And we don't talk about that on the landing page now. And
so would you do that as an A/B test? This was obviously done as like, we're doing this. This makes sense.
Yep.
You stated the benefits that you expect to get from it. And doesn't sound like you're doing any sort of testing or any sort of mm-hmm. quantification of that. But now for the marketing page, would you plan to, I'm basically suggesting you should probably do an A/B test there.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And so do that, have like two versions of the page running at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would love to do that. It would be interesting to see. I'd be surprised if we couldn't beat it, but we might be like, holy crap, we didn't beat it.
It's possible. That's why we test.
Yeah.
It might be a null result. And then
sure.
it's like, is it even worth changing or what do we do here?
Well, if it's a null result, then it's kind of like up to you. right? It's like, okay, so if you like this new one better, then go with that. And you know you haven't hurt your conversion rate.
Yeah. We had that on Upcase, but we made the transition because we felt the newer one gave us more of the sort of content that we wanted to be able to iterate on.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up fleshing out and gave us a platform to build on.
One thing that might be difficult to... Actually, no, I guess this would sort of show up in the results. But like, I have noticed a thing of some people are signing up for FormKeep and they don't really know what it does. Like they people are thinking it's a form. Some people think it's a form builder, which makes sense because we keep calling it like a form. We keep using the word form on the page, basically.
That word. It's like me and Trails.
Yeah. So like we need to, I get these, like I'm getting some non-technical people that sign up and like, how do I make a field that's required? Or like, how do I add a field to the thing? And I'm like, you edit the HTML. And I'm like, and so, yeah, that's our fault. That's on us. That's like bad, you know, copy marketing, whatever. So fixify that.
Fixify.
So basically that and activation is where I would love to have Tyson looking at next.
Mm-hmm.
Probably activation first. Not sure. Like we have this like crucial page, which is the like setup page of the, like, you just signed up, gave us a credit card. Okay. You're in the app. Here's how you point your form at us.
Mm-hmm.
This page is like so high leverage that it feels like, this has got to be amazing and we should be testing stuff on this or like iterating on it and making it more awesome. And now we have this nice, beautiful markups and styles and all that. So we should be able to get in there and do some stuff.
One thing that I notice about a lot of the conversations that we have is basically almost everything that you've talked about is inclusive of someone being at formkeep.com and after.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any plans to do more in the way of marketing and bringing in new folks to the page? So like we're talking about a limited testing budget, and part of that is based on how many people come through the app.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that? It sounds like there hasn't been much work done on that front.
Not much. I mean, there's the blogging, there's blogs, posts going out and all that has not shown good ROI so far, I would say. I mean, definitely has not. It's one of those things where it's like, as you've experienced, it's kind of hard to quantify. Like, how did this person, like, our search rankings are improving. I think it's because of these blog posts. That's probably helped. That's probably worth X dollars. So it's hard to get into, but like, we have that Drip email course not converting at all. Zero people of the have gone through the email course converted into FormKeep customers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
So we turned off the little toaster widgety thing because it's just like, this is not a good call to action. It's not helping us.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because the email course is good. I mean, I think it's a really solid course, but it's not turning people into customers. So, yes, this has been on my mind. One thing I keep noticing over and over is that the people that are paying us the most money are digital agencies.
Making contact us forms.
Making contact us forms. Yeah.
There you go. That's really narrow in focus.
Yeah.
Now, where
or
do they
maybe
hang out?
Like a jobs form.
Right.
But or that's like
still,
or like maybe stay in touch, join our email list thing.
Yep.
But it's mostly just contact us forms. And then it's probably like 75% contact us and 25% get a job or something. And the people that are like paying us $100 a month again and again and again are like digital agency people. So
can you use like Facebook ads and say, show me digital agency folks?
Maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be worth looking into. We're running Twitter ads and Facebook ads and Google AdWords. They basically are all not working.
Not converting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. So like Dan set that up. I don't know how much work that's supposed to take. Is it a thing where like you do it and then you spend the next 6 months or many months tuning it and getting like, do you need a ton of knowledge? I don't know if it's normal or like, does this mean that those are not good channels for us? Or does it mean that we need to invest a bunch of work in them? I don't know. But I've had this crazy idea of like going the old-fashioned sales route of like, what if I got together a list somehow of like 100 digital agencies and was like, try to get in touch with them, like straight up prospecting email type things. I mean, this is how people sell software. Like Nathan Barry's talk about what made ConvertKit explode was when he started doing like old-fashioned get in touch with people doing sales manually. Just sending emails like, hey, are you happy? Like, I noticed you're doing this. I'm a big fan of this, whatever. Like, are you happy with MailChimp? It seems like you're using MailChimp. Are they doing good stuff for you? And just trying to set up, you know, things.
Do you know what terms that, so you've narrowed it down to a very specific audience that you think is where you should be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what words they would use to describe your business?
Describe my business.
Or AKA what words they would type into the Google box?
I'm
do they
sure.
say form endpoint, which I think you rank very highly for, or do they say contact form? Not sure where you rank for that.
Right.
What is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure if this is a problem a lot of them people know they have.
Mm.
Like, it's probably not, it's not their biggest problem for sure, and that's unfortunate, but it's definitely true. It does not, like, make you way more money, exactly, although it does save you time, so it's kind of that. but it might be the kind of thing where I need to find some way to tell these people that there is a way of doing this that solves the pain of, hey, you're making all these things and you're also making backends for these and like supporting them or like charging your clients to host them or something. There's a nicer way of doing
this. I imagine there is some nomenclature, and if they're anything like me, they're putting the words into Google. That's what I do with every problem I have in the universe. I put the words into Google. So if you can figure out what it is that they're saying, is it contact form? Is it whatever? I'm not sure how to do this, but I think if you could do that, that's also probably a channel that makes sense. I'm not sure what the mechanism is.
Yeah, there, I'm curious. You're making me curious, like what AdWords stuff we are doing right now.
Yeah,
I should check into that, because it hasn't worked so far. But I wonder,
what is your lifetime value around at this point?
$200.
$200,
I think.
So you can spend some money acquiring people. I think. I feel like ads make sense, and particularly a certain type. And so if I would be surprised if you ended up at a place where you're like, you know what, just we haven't found an ad channel that we can use that works for us.
Yeah, that would be weird.
That would be
right?
surprising. So well, I wonder if there's iteration that you can do in there, and it's the wording or it's the placement or it's the targeting or any of those. There are a lot of different levers to pull on that.
Yep.
But that feels like a thing that could be worthwhile for you.
Yep. I think my attention will turn to top of funnel at some point soon. It doesn't feel right now, honestly. Like with like activation is going to be higher leverage than that, I think, because it's so much further down the funnel. So we'll see.
I mean, this is the constant question of where to put your attention across the funnel, because if you fix activation, that's great, because eventually when you put more people at the top, then they activate better, and that's awesome.
Right.
But if you can put a bunch more people at the top, then you can iterate faster lower in the funnel because you now have more people going through it and your test budget now goes way up. You can do 2 tests in a month rather than currently you're probably around 1 test in a month.
Yeah.
And
I guess
like,
that's true.
There's a lot of conversations we end up having where you're like, I think it's better. I'm not really sure. It's about like, I don't know, 25 people that went through it. And you're sort of limited by that. So I can definitely see the argument for saying that activation is the right place to spend your energy right now. I could also see an argument for top of funnel is the right place. You've got to get a bunch more people in here so that we can try a bunch more things.
Mm.
I don't know how to answer that. I know that that's one of the typically hard questions in this world.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. It's hard to know where to focus.
I guess my place is to ask you that question every once in a while
sure.
so that you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I know, totally. And I did like at MicroConf and also like watching like even like old videos of like Rob Walling, also MicroConf, just older MicroConf.
Yeah.
The consensus seems to be like activation is pretty damn huge. Like you can't just keep pouring, like don't keep pouring stuff into the leaky bucket, like fix the bucket first and then figure out how to get the top of the funnel. Seems like people move basically from the in out or like the bottom up,
yep.
I guess.
And in absence of any other stronger metrics, then I'd say go with what you've heard anecdotally from people you respect. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Anecdotal driven development.
When you got nothing but anecdotes, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
You could apply some of that hard science that we talked about earlier.
Sounds hard. I think that's it for me-ish.
All right.
I mean, other stuff has happened, but those are the big ones.
Let's talk Upcase. So, unfortunately, in the 2 weeks since we last chatted, not a ton has shipped, which is okay. We're moving on a number of things, but we've had still some cleanup and kind of follow-on from the domain transition. So it's starting to show benefits, but unfortunately there is just a lot of noise in the system. So I think the last time we talked, I was like, actually, it's kind of down. Things are bad. This has gone poorly. I don't believe that was accurate then, nor is it accurate now. I think Google Analytics is just confused.
Okay.
That's the best summary that we can take. So we have a handful of different measures that we can use to decide how did this thing go? Are we doing better as a result of it? Bottom line is monthly recurring revenue, and that has gone up consistently, even with an expected lag of like, I don't know, most people don't convert for 2 or 3 weeks. We're past that now, and we seem to be doing better, if anything. So the bottom line, the most important number, going in the right direction, that leads me to believe, if nothing else, this wasn't a terrible idea, and Google Analytics would have led me to believe that the bottom of the world had fallen out. Our traffic had cut at least in half, if not worse, according to Google Analytics.
Whoa.
That doesn't seem to be the case, though, because that would manifest everywhere in every other metric that we have. So another random data point we have is account created. So someone came to the site, they created an account, OAuth with Google, whatever it is. That has gone up slightly over that same time period. And those should track very closely. Is my there's no reason for, if we did lose half our traffic, for that to manifest as, well, but twice as many people created an account. I wouldn't expect to see that.
Okay.
And there are a number of other data points, like subscriptions to email campaigns, things like that. They're all holding steady. So mostly we're a little confused right now. We're trying to sort this out. We got the best minds in the Upcase world working on it, but we don't have a clear answer on it, unfortunately. That said, there are a few anecdotal things that do speak to this going well. So particularly, one of the goals here is to rank better in search. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that for a number of terms. So that seems to be true. That's going well. But yeah, I wish it were a little clearer right now.
It sounds weird.
It does. It's been weird. And the team that I'm working with is extremely knowledgeable about Google Analytics and all of the associated things. So I don't believe this is like, oh, we just kind of missed something.
Right.
There's some weird stuff. And we've done kind of a number of iterations. Like, I found out that I had an infinite sign-in redirect that only Google would ever find. No human would ever do this. But if you are on a page and you click sign in, we add a param to the URL that says you are on this page. But there's also a sign-in link on the sign-in page. And you can keep clicking that, and that recursively creates a deeper and deeper nested URL. The specific
sign-in link on the... Oh, like accidentally there was a sign-in link on the sign-in.
I mean, like, I had to purposefully take it out, which is what I ended up doing, but then it was still there. And so I was like, what's going on? And then I found there's a sign-up link in the footer on this page, and there were these weird interactions. And what we believe happened is basically Upcase had this long history, lots of data, and so Google had a view of what it was. When we transitioned to thoughtbot.com/upcase, Google had to basically reset and say, like, there's a new thing in the world. What is it? And crawled it and indexed a lot of pages. But in doing so, it found pages that were not real and found particularly this infinite redirect sort of thing, or infinite recursion is actually the better term for it.
Okay.
It's really interesting to actually watch as we were trying to debug this. The team that I'm working with has a scraper tool that essentially acts like a spider. Which I know that these exist, and I understand academically how this technology works, but it was basically like, yep, fetch a page, look for every link on it, go to that link, fetch that page, continue. And basically there's some upper limit as to how many pages Google will index for a given domain.
Mm.
We were maxing that out based on this sign-in recursion.
Hmm.
So it meant that actually some of the pages were not even being indexed. So that was not new with the domain transition, but it was, I believe, augmented as a result, because Google was like, well, let's take a new look at this whole thing.
Hmm.
So anyway, this has been complicated. I think we're trending in the right direction. I think things are going well. I still believe in this. I still feel that this was the right thing. I definitely wish it had gone more directly, but we are in a better place. Like, as a result, I cleaned up a ton of broken links in the ThoughtBot ecosystem. I've made pull requests to so many different repos of ours. I'm like, oh, that's not a real page. That was never a real page.
Mm.
So overall, things are better as a result of this. But yeah, I wish I had a cleaner answer on that. I hope and expect to have that in the coming weeks. But for now, we're not quite there.
Weird.
Yes.
Sounds like I wouldn't have thought that the recursion thing was even a thing in the world. Like,
yeah.
It'll just keep following that, and because the URL params change, it gets confused?
It depends. We think that that's what happened. It's possible that Google is smart enough to say that, like, oh, I seem to be in a recursive loop here. I'm not going to continue following. And it's just query params that were being added rather than an actual distinct path.
Right.
But it looked as though Google was not indexing everything after the fix. It looked as though Google was. So it seems as though this was a real problem.
I wonder if you could...
Bad people do use this for bad things.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Okay.
That was how my team was like, oh, wait, is it this? Oh, yeah, that's one of those dark patterns that people use on the internet. They make essentially link farms with recursive.
To make it look like you have more stuff going on. And so.
To make a given keyword appear more, because each of those are treated as a distinct page. But if it's serving the same content, now whatever term, be it some pharmaceutical, is now showing up 10,000 times on this domain.
Huh. Interesting.
Google's very smart, and Google continues to improve around these sort of things, but these are the battles that they have to fight.
Interesting. I was thinking about it from more of a, like, practical joke kind of thing.
Oh.
Just, like, writing search engine spider honeypots from which they cannot escape. It's like, oh yeah, I got plenty more links. Just keep on following them.
They seem to have an upper limit.
I'm going to guess that Google is smarter at this than I am.
I can't imagine the scope of that problem for real, though. The work that Google does is, it's a weird thing.
Yeah. Okay, so it seems like your traffic got cut in half, but none of your other numbers seem to
corroborate
that.
I don't actually believe
that
the traffic got cut in half. I believe it's a reporting problem.
Interesting. Okay.
Because the other stuff would manifest. We would see that reflected in at least one of the other metrics, and nothing else, all the way down to bottom line revenue, have not moved at all, or have improved, actually.
Okay. Weird.
So I think Google Analytics got confused. Don't really know. We're going to figure it out.
Have you been able to replicate that fall off in like Amplitude, for example, or like some other analytics segmenty tool?
No, I've actually specifically not seen it. So right. I've checked it in Amplitude, I've checked it in Drip, I've checked it in Barometrics, I've checked it in basically all of the different fan out of how can I tell how many people are coming to my site while I have these indirect measures, and they all point to a slight increase.
Oh yeah, you should be able to. Yeah, okay. I don't know if we still have segment SQL or whatever they call it now.
We do not still have that, sadly. Bummer. But I'm seeing enough downstream.
That
I've
like,
checked
you
it
think
enough
it's just
different...
an issue with Google Analytics?
It's really the only one that's reporting this. And it's weird, though.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I
feel
about it.
I don't know what to do with that.
Unfortunately, we did not release the bourbon course. We are teetering on the edge. I feel great about our ability to get that done next week. But, you know, we'll see. I get to talk about that when it's shipped. But trying to think within the context of that, of how we can continue to iterate on that process and get better and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of the core work of Upcase. So the better we can get at it, the better.
What do you think slowed you down that was unexpected?
It's not so much unexpected, but it takes a while to produce the notes. And I continue to think about whether or not that's a good investment or whether there's a way we can scale that back or simplify it. Historically, we had very little in terms of notes. And mm-hmm. then basically with me, I started writing a lot of words, and I kind of regret that now.
Hmm.
I think the content is better for it. There's no question about that. But it's whether it's better commensurate with the amount of effort that goes into it.
Mm. Is that what your is undone now, is like creating the notes for the existing videos that are otherwise done?
Yes. Yeah, so the videos are done. Production occasionally will spike and we'll have a little more work than Tom can take on at any given time. And so mm-hmm. there's this kind of stage gate process where, okay, we've got a plan, then we've got to record, then Tom's got to edit, then we get it back and we do final preparation and actual trail production. And that's where we're at right now. If there were any way to parallelize some of those or to make it not this strictly linear process, I think that would be beneficial. We're thinking about things. We've got some ideas.
I wonder if you could release the videos without the notes. And then two options. One is just release the notes over time, like you do them.
Mm-hmm.
Like at least the course gets out the door and everyone gets to see it. And then you slowly add notes after the fact. Or you go the kind of like crowdsourcey Railscast kind of ASCII thing. And it's like, we have an editable wiki down here. Please add notes as you see fit.
Yeah, I think either the first one seems like it's kind of just distributing the effort over time, which I'm not sure. Like if we weren't doing this, we would just be working on a different one, and I'm not sure how.
Yeah,
much
I don't
value.
Think it's a huge win, but it does at least get it out the door sooner.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely ways to think about it that we can improve it, but I don't know.
If this were like a development task, and it was like it's not done, but we could definitely ship it and get it out there, I'd be like, okay, yeah. I feel like you'd be easy to convince on that, but because it's a course, you're thinking of it as like, well, it's got to have all the things there.
It's not so much that. It's that, sure, it's out there, but does that really matter?
I mean, if it doesn't, then maybe you shouldn't do it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in theory, there's a benefit of now more people will see it, come, sign up, et cetera. But my thinking is it's worth getting it all done so that thing's done. That's not something that's on my plate anymore. Because if there's work left to be done on a course, then that's going to distract me from whatever else I would move on to next.
Okay.
But... yeah, so there are things, and I'm trying to think about different ways to improve that. But mostly it's just right now we've got a little bit of work to get done. I also try and constrain releases to Tuesday through Thursday, just based on anecdotally how people, A, use the site, and B, what I understand about like best practices with Twitter and announcements and things like that.
Hmm. Okay.
So I could, we could release tomorrow, I think, but I'm going to push it into next week because I believe that's a better timing for that.
Okay. So do you have a marketing plan for the course?
Some, but not as detailed as I think you would probably want and will probably hold me to. So I'm working with Tyson Gatch. He's popular in this episode.
Yes.
He was the co-host, or frankly,
he started
host.
Listening to the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, he told me.
Because now he's featured,
he's mentioned,
effectively. Yeah.
he is really the host of this thing.
That brings it up to two listeners, by the way. It's just me and him.
Yeah, I guess I haven't listened in a while.
Yeah. Did you stop listening when you started being on it?
I listened for a while, and then I stopped.
Yeah,
okay. It gets weird.
Yeah.
My head goes weird when I listen to myself.
It's kind of navel-gazy.
I also listen to myself on the weekly iteration every week. There's too much of me on the internet, frankly.
Okay, all right. So, marketing.
Tyson is great, and so I'm trying to work with him to think about, like, what are the channels? I don't necessarily have a foot in as many of the design channels, design, you know, conversations on the internet,
mm-hmm.
but hoping that he can help with that. And then the way I think about it is there's the initial release, but then any marketing efforts can kind of follow on. So it's like, all right, now let's get it mentioned on this and mentioned on that. And that doesn't have to coincide with the, like, first day that the thing is visible on Upcase.
Sure.
So that's... The idea is get it done so that it's out there and I'm happy with what it is and then transition into marketing mode. And so I have a checklist of a number of things, but I think there's room to improve that. And so we'll be talking about that in the coming weeks.
Okay, good. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter too much as long as you get things. Like there is a difference between a course that is 1 month old and 3 months old, I think, or like 2 weeks old and 6 weeks old, I would say, in terms of like the internet's perception of it. Like, there is a time period where it's new.
There is a time period where it's new. This is a distinct difference that I see between the weekly iteration and the courses, is that the courses feel evergreen. People come in and they're like, oh, cool, I will do this. It doesn't matter if it came out yesterday or 2 weeks ago. It's the topic that I'm interested in. And so I'm kind of relying on that. But there is a certain newness, and being able to take advantage of that on the internet has value.
Right. I'm thinking of you, like, selling bloggers or things like that, like people that are influencers, like, on, like, hey, there's a new course versus, hey, we have a course.
Yep.
Not a huge difference, I would say, but
no, I think it's
probably something. So your window is maybe not, you know, infinite. You can't just
decide
to market at some other point in the future.
Typically, the way I view it is the, like, 2 weeks following the quote-unquote release of a course is focused on marketing that course. And so trying to fit it in there and trying to do whatever it is that I'm going to do. But again, as per our previous discussions, there's room for improvement on what that means. So I'm going to try and figure that out.
That feels a little backwards in terms of order almost to me. Like... It's a little different because you do have an existing customer base. And so you're not like trying to like go sell an ebook to a bunch of people, right? But like if I were selling an info product, I would seek to like gather the audience and get them excited and have a bunch of channels lined up so that when it did launch, it was like there was a boom on the internet. And suddenly it was like, wow, I'm hearing about this bourbon course everywhere. Like, why is everyone tweeting about this, writing about this, talking about it? And so like all that work, that's actually like mostly preparatory work ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, partly we do have our 10,000-ish people on the particular segment of the mailing list that we have, so they'll get a notification about it. But the idea of, I'm hearing about this everywhere, I kind of like that. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you should be getting a boom. Like, for the amount of work these courses take, like, there should be some sort of, like, kaplow in, like, signups, revenue, buzz, at the very least, kind of things. And so, if it's just kind of like... If you don't see that, it feels like a missed opportunity.
I agree. I think we've gotten better with every single one, but I think you're highlighting that there's still a gap there. And so I hope to continue working through that gap. We'll see what I can do.
Okay. Let me know if you need ideas.
I need ideas, Ben.
Okay.
We'll talk offline. Last thing, I went on vacation. That was great. That was really good. It was excellent. I was away. I had minimal access to the internet, which is perfect. No internet would have probably been bad. Very minimal. Like, I basically only had internet on my phone. Perfect. Didn't touch a computer the entire time.
Good.
It was wonderful.
Good.
Really enjoyed that.
That's awesome. I'm envious. I rented a lake house for later this summer, and it has no cell reception and no internet.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to be off the grid.
Off
the inner grid.
You'll be on an electric grid?
I have this friend who... Can I say these details? I think I can. Yeah, who recently sold his company to some healthcare organization. He works there now. And he was like, yeah... I don't know. He's like, there's no cell reception. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, I can't like check my email. And I was like, right. He's like, and he had anxiety over it. And it was kind of, my reaction was kind of like, you're not that important.
Yeah.
Like, you're not like doing the deal still. Like, you got bought. Like, I'm sure you have big projects that are happening now. But like, if you go like a couple days without checking your email, is the world going to really blow up? You're not the only person. I don't know. I'm skeptical of anyone that thinks they need that much connectivity.
If you do, that's a problem.
Right.
And you probably don't. I think are the two summaries that I would give of that.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine there are periods of time in your life where like you can't take a vacation because that would actually be disastrous for a current thing you're doing. But like given like 3 months notice, you should be able to have like 2 or 3 days where you don't check your damn email.
Yep.
Especially since you already sold the company. Like, dude, just calm down.
Yeah. Well, I haven't sold anything yet, Ben. Well, I guess I've sold a couple subscriptions.
You got to sell some subscriptions. You got to email 50 design bloggers when you launch this bad boy.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Actually, Tyson should email them.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hi, Tyson. This will be in the future when I actually ask you to do that, though. So that's complicated.
Yeah. Who knows? So I guess that's it. Want to do our questions?
Let's do our questions. Ben, how is FormKeep better for subscribers than it was last 2 weeks ago?
The UI is fresh and new. Fresh and clean.
Better information architecture.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to get more subscribers?
Pass.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
What did you do well that you should continue?
I think shipping early, like the UI shipping was pretty aggressive, like getting it done by today, I think was... You know, there's definitely some rough parts. There's some things we know are their issues, but I'm glad it's... I'd rather have it out and then iterate than, you know, not.
Hard to iterate on nothing, as we say. What did you do poorly that you should try and stop?
I might be a little too easy to convince to rewrite things. You know? Like, as a developer myself, like, it's like, oh, man, I know the glory that is, like, starting from scratch.
Yep.
And getting to throw everything out. And so I think I'm particularly susceptible to... And, like... To that like pitch, and in both cases there was like another really useful thing that I was like, as soon as we finish this rewrite we'll do the useful thing, where it's like Ember and then the pricing change and then this and then like the activation funnel slash marketing change. It's like, maybe you should have started with the other one and then do the thing that sounds like it's a little more fun, even though it's going to slow it down a little bit. So I need to keep an eye on that. I mean, okay. there's not much more I can rewrite, but I think just being aware of like
I've already rewritten everything, so I'm probably safe from future rewrites.
Right, exactly. Just being aware of, like, it's always going to take, you know, a good amount longer than you expect it is. So, like, do you really want to spend the next, like, 4 weeks on this particular thing?
Yep.
Or are there, like, shorter, easier, faster things you can get done?
All right. What are your plans for the coming week?
Keeping my eye on this activation thing, possibly digging into that a bit more. Probably trying to... shipping the form linter next week.
Oh, that's a thing now?
I forgot to talk about that. Did we talk about that at all in the podcast? Yeah, we did.
We've talked about it a couple weeks back.
Oh, well.
Let's pick it up next week.
Okay, we'll pick it up next week. But
I'll probably
be shipping it next week. And then I imagine we'll be a good chunk into the marketing site redesign as well. Or, yeah, I think so. We'll see.
All right.
Best guess.
What's your MRR? Is it up or down?
It's up 3% to 7,055. That's a change of like 200 and change.
All right.
Why is the product better for your customers than last week?
Weekly iteration went out, actually two, but other than that, nothing.
Okay. What have you done to acquire more customers?
I'd say continued iteration on the domain transition. That feels like a foundational thing that I'm tempted to discount everything that we're doing following on, but I think that actually is good and valuable. Let's get more subscriber work. So going to give myself credit there.
Okay. And you did like a bunch of URL updates and things like that.
Yeah. Ton. So many.
What did you do well?
I took a vacation. That is an important thing.
Yeah.
Reset the clocks a little bit.
Yeah. Do more of that.
Yeah, I should. I'm not great at it.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Okay. What did you do less well that you should reduce?
I think you're right in highlighting that we haven't done as much work leading into the launch. I don't necessarily want to postpone it in this case, but I think we can kind of like align the two. But thinking about that for the future feels like a thing that would be worthwhile. If anything, thinking back through all of the launches that I've been part of, each one it feels like we're catching up a little bit more. So like the delta between we were really scrambling to pull this one together versus the next one was like, all right, we're pretty good. We know what we're doing. The next one felt a little bit better. This one feels a little bit better. Now, if we can actually get ahead of it and be thinking about marketing as kind of a first-class citizen rather than the thing that happens after, I think that'd be a really good idea. So thank you for that, and we'll see if we can do it.
Okay. What do you hope to do by next time?
Actually launch the bourbon course, spend some time marketing that, reaching out to people, getting some links on the internet, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I think I want to stabilize / implement a few tests. We have some things that have been running that are either null or positive.
Like A-B tests.
A-B tests. Some stuff on the email side, some stuff on marketing pages, and a few internal tests. So I kind of want to revisit all of those, decide to continue, kill, implement, et cetera. And so I'll probably report back on those, but get those into a stable place so that I can ignore them for, in the next few weeks while they're running.
Okay. What is your MRR?
MRR is at 35349. I think this is the first time I've reported. No, second time I reported a 35. But this is the local maximum, so that's fun.
Cool.
Not historical maximum for Upcase, but local maximum. So that is an increase of 1.2%, roughly $400.
Cool.
All right.
All right, that's it. Today's show was produced and edited by Tom the Phenomenon Obarski. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to giantrobots.fm/196. Thanks for listening.